on his side, hampers and candles and soap sets. Nothing from my mother's family. I hadn't seen any of them since the funeral.
Nothing for you from the Brennan man?
Of course there was, I lied. It was too big to bring home.
And what did Fionn get you?
My father's face lit up. Fionn's presence had become the highlight of our Christmas morning, over the last few years, and he always remembered to include something that my father would enjoy as well. A ridiculous board game that was suitable for two players, a DVD of a TV show from the 70s, some old-fashioned sweets that my father had confessed to loving as a child.
It's not Christmas without Fionn's gift.
We decided not to give each other presents this year, I said. It had been 4 months of silence. Day after day I'd knocked on the door of the studio. Fionn, I'd said. Fionn, I know you're in there. I could smell the paint and the weed, could hear the creaking of the floorboards as he shifted from one foot to the other. Our house was too small for anyone to disappear within its walls, and yet I was never able to catch him. I left the art books outside his bedroom door on the 22nd of December, with a card begging him to forgive me. I needed Fionn to forgive me, so I could tell him about what had happened at Matthew's house, about the photos that I had found, and the letter, the words seared into my brain, I love you, Flo. It was the first thing I thought about when I woke up, the last thing at night, my fingers worrying the words like Nana Kathleen did with her rosary beads. What should I do, Fionn? But Fionn went home, leaving the books and the card behind. I crept into his room and I sat on the bed. I miss you, Fionn, I said to myself.
Ah,
my father said now, gathering the paper for recycling.
That's a pity.
It was my decision, I said, avoiding his gaze. It was getting weird, the amount of effort he put into my presence. It's not like we're dating or anything.
Mm-hmm,
he said, picking up the last present under the tree, an envelope.
This is from me. It's probably not as exciting as whatever Fionn would have dreamt up for you, but I hope you like it.
I opened it, presuming it would be money, as always, but it wasn't. Where did you get this?
I asked Fionn for help, he said.
It was a 100-euro voucher for an art supply shop in Dublin, the same one that Fionn and I used to go to when we were at college. We would spend hours in there, making lists of all the things we would buy if money was no object. I don't make art anymore.
I know,
my father said,
and that's a real shame. When I think of you, out in the garden shed, happy out, splashing away.
I was a kid.
And you have to be a kid to paint, do you?
What's the point, Dad? There's no money in it. Fionn is up to his eyes in loans, and he's about 10 times more talented than I am. Dublin is expensive, you know.
You could move home. I saw a 4-bed house for sale on Bridge Street for 85 grand. You wouldn't get anything like that in Dublin.
But I don't want to live in a 4-bed house on Bridge Street.
And why not? What would be wrong with it?
My father's face was weathered from the sun and the wind, lines scored across his forehead, his lips chapped. He was wearing his best suit, bobbling on the lapels, for Christmas Day, his tie a swirling relic from the 80s. He wanted me to move home and meet a man like him and live a life like his, a life that would make more sense to him. My father seemed destined to be surrounded by women he was unable to understand. There's nothing wrong with it. I looked at the voucher again. Thanks, Dad.
Not a bother, pet,
he said.
I'd better go check on the dinner.
I put the voucher back in its envelope, and I placed it back under the tree. I didn't think about it or that letter. Love you more than I have ever loved anyone. I refused to allow myself to do so. Instead, I set the dinner table. The white linen tablecloth that was used for special occasions, The faded mistletoe placemats my mother had bought in Clonmel for their first Christmas as a married couple. The crystal glasses they received as wedding presents.
I got us a turkey breast,
Dad told me. He'd been something of a tentative cook since Nana Kathleen died.
Didn't see the sense in getting a whole bird when it's only ourselves.
We pulled crackers and put the paper hats on our heads. Mine was red and my father's was purple.
Like royalty I am,
he said. I laughed because I could tell that he thought he had made a joke. I gathered up the dishes, stacking them in the dishwasher. Will we play Monopoly? Or Trivial Pursuit? I asked.
Not with you, thank you very much.
What's that supposed to mean?
It means you're a terrible sore loser, Sarah. You have been ever since you were a child. Let's spare ourselves a repeat of 2006, shall we?
He turned the TV on instead, for Mrs. Brown. We watched the Fair City special, the Coronation Street special, and a horrifyingly violent movie which seemed an odd choice for Christmas Day.
Are you not having anything yourself?
He asked as I made him a toasted cheese sandwich and a hot chocolate that evening. I'm not hungry.
But you barely touched your dinner.
I told you, I said, sitting back down. I'm not hungry.
You've gotten very thin. I'm worried about you.
He took a bite of the sandwich, barely chewing before he swallowed.
And you've been checking that phone all day.
He sipped the cocoa, inhaling through his teeth at the heat.
Did himself not call?
Who? I asked. We both knew that Matthew hadn't called. He hadn't texted back either. But he must have read my message by now. Maybe he was angry with me for sneaking out of his house without saying goodbye, or annoyed that I hadn't texted him back for 4 days.
The Brennan fella.
He's with his son, I said. He probably hasn't had a chance to look at his phone yet.
It would have only taken 2 minutes for him to call you.
Yeah, I said. I guess that's true. I returned to my phone, scrolling down, down, down. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. New shoes and new phones and new handbags. Hashtag lucky girl. Hashtag Santa came. Hashtag boy done good. Hashtag spoilt. The official MBA Instagram was silent. The most recent post, a generic Happy Christmas to friends near and far on Christmas Eve. I tried Florence's Instagram account. Private. Harry. Private. I went on to Facebook and dug deeper. Florence's mother. Private. I was surprised at that. Usually the mothers provided the best stalking opportunities, with their apparent inability to fix their security settings. I could only access one photo on Florence's page, her profile picture. 300 likes, and a woman called Evelyn Kavanagh had commented on how beautiful she looks. Thanks, Auntie Evie, Florence had written underneath. Evelyn Kavanagh was a woman in her 60s, I guessed, with a silver bob and a jointy scarf tied around her neck, and her photo albums were public. Hitting the mulled wine hard, she'd posted 2 hours ago. I skipped past photos of Florence and her parents, and Harry and their golden retriever and their beautiful Christmas tree, real, of course, and tastefully decorated in creams and golds, until I found it. A photo of Harry and Matthew and Florence in matching Rudolph sweaters, rosy-cheeked and beaming at the camera. The perfect, happy family. Mother, father, child. Everything as it should be. I'm going to bed, I said.
But we haven't watched Meet Me in St. Louis, my father said. We always watch that on Christmas Day.
I'm tired. I got up, resting my hand on his shoulder.
Okay then, love.
He placed his hand over mine, but he didn't look at me.
Sarah, can I ask you something?
What?
His
voice was hesitant.
Are you happy?
My father had never asked me that question before. Sure, Dad, I said. Of course I am. Night. Am I happy? I asked myself as I brushed my teeth. Am I happy? I didn't know how to answer that question. I'm not sure if I ever did. On the 4th of January, I kissed my father on the cheek and promised that I would visit more often, both of us aware that I was lying. Boarding the bus to Dublin, I recognized someone from school getting on before me. We avoided eye contact, afraid of having to sit next to each other and make small talk. What have you been up to? Teaching? Wow, I didn't think you'd end up a teacher. Ha ha. The two women behind me were talking about how much they'd eaten over the holidays. I can barely zip up my jeans. I'm a disgrace. I'll have to be so good for January now. Sarah. Hey, Happy New Year. Hope you had a good Christmas. Did Harry like that book I recommended? Outside, the land had been stripped bare by winter. The trees whittled thin. As we drove through a series of towns and villages, I watched the men and women and children, people I would never know and who would never know me. I wondered if they were happy. I wondered if they knew what being happy meant. I had a sudden urge to wave at them so they would look at me, so they'd remember my face. I wanted them to know that I existed. The bus pulled into the station at Dublin, and I bumped into the girl from school as we grabbed our bags from the hold. Julie, I said. I didn't see you there at all. Good Christmas? Sarah. I'm heading back to Dublin today. Would be good to see you. Sarah, if you have time, obvs. Kiss, kiss. Hey! I called out as I pushed the door open. Anyone home? I found Fionn in the living room, a woman sitting next to him. They were holding hands, her legs intertwined with his. Hi, she said, smiling at me. I'm Natalia. She glanced at Fionn, waiting for him to say something. I'm Fionn's girlfriend.
Girlfriend?
Yes.
She squeezed his knee.
I thought you'd told all your friends about me, Finny.
Finny?
Well, I said. I didn't hear anything about... Come on, babe, Fionn said, standing up. Let's go to my room. She seems nice, I heard Natalia say as they climbed the stairs. Nice was what girls like Natalia called you when they decided you didn't pose a threat because you weren't as pretty as they were. I waited to hear if Fionn replied, but there was only the slam of his bedroom door. Sarah. I'm sorry that I left that night without saying goodbye. I was feeling a bit sick and I didn't want to disturb you. You seemed like you needed your sleep. In the staff room, the fridge was packed high with Tupperware boxes of salad and soup, everyone discussing their New Year's resolutions.
I'm going to go to the gym 3 times a week, maybe 4.
I've signed up for a boot camp.
I'm on a juicing cleanse.
Apparently it's sugar is the problem now, not fat. And in the 80s they were telling us to avoid fat like the plague. You wouldn't know what to believe, would you?
Yes,
Mrs. Burke said, pouring milk into her coffee, watching me.
A new year, a new start.
No harm at all, I think.
Sarah, could you text me? I'm worried that you're not getting my messages. Sarah, if you're mad with me, then just say it. This is getting ridiculous. Sarah, Matthew? There was a phone ringing.
Stop it, I said as I opened my eyes. Stop.
But it rang and it rang and it rang. It was too bright in this room. This room that was not my bedroom. Not Dunfinan, not Stony Batter either. Where was I? I was in a double bed. Soft cotton sheets. Flamingo patterned wallpaper. I remembered. I was in Kevin's house on Mount Pleasant Square. He and Robbie had thrown a party last night.
Dry January, be damned!
Kevin had toasted the room, raising a glass to the men in shirts unbuttoned too low, and women in jewel-coloured dresses that didn't wrinkle when they stood up to go to the bathroom.
They talked about school fees and villa rentals and how much their houses were worth since the crash, and I pretended to be interested. What is he doing right now? And where is he? And who is he with? And why hasn't he texted me back? And maybe his phone is broken, and maybe he hates me. And maybe I should text him again to check? No, Sarah, no. Wait.
Didn't seem to affect Matthew Brennan much, did it?
One man had said, and I'd started at the mention of his name. Robbie met my gaze, an almost imperceptible shake of the head warning me to stay quiet.
Every year he seems to have crawled up the rich list by another few places. He's such a wheeler-dealer, a real Del Boy in a fancy suit.
Don't be mean about that poor man, a woman said. I take Pilates with Florence Kavanagh, and I'm telling you now, Matthew Brennan is not over her.
Really? Someone else asked. How so?
Pining after her, especially since she started dating Daniel McGuinness. Apparently, Matthew literally begged to spend Christmas with her family this year because he had nowhere else to go. Florence feels sorry for him. She's so soft. And he is the father of her child, so I suppose. Any more wine? I interrupted her, waving my empty glass at Kevin. The phone rang again now, and I could hear the mattress springs creak in the room next door. I threw the duvet cover onto the floor, the mascara-smeared pillows following, and I found my phone hidden down the back of the bed.
Hello?
Sarah,
my father said.
What's wrong with your voice?
Why are you phoning me this early?
It's 11:30 a.m. That's a perfectly acceptable time to phone someone.
Not on a Sunday morning, it's not.
Out again last night, I take it.
I went to a dinner party at Kevin's house, I said. It was all very civilized.
There was a pause.
Kevin, is he?
Yes, Kevin is Robbie's boyfriend.
Pressure was building at the base of my spine.
Listen, Dad, is there something you wanted to talk to me about?
There is.
I could hear a rustle of newspaper.
I was reading the Sunday Independent today.
I'm delighted for you. I'm really sorry, Dad, but I don't have the energy for this right now. I'll phone you tomorrow, okay?
It's about Matthew Brennan.
What? I said. What about Matthew?
There's a photo of him in Life magazine at some shindig, and he's with a woman.
Dad, he's allowed to talk to other women, you know. This is a ridiculous conversation.
I was only trying to help, he said. I don't want to see you getting hurt.
Oh, spare me. You've never liked him, have you? You have these preconceived notions about who Matthew is just because he's rich and he's Harold Kavanagh's son-in-law. You refuse to give him a chance.
Give him a chance? Sarah, I've never even met the man. If you had bothered to bring him home to Dunfinan, I might be better equipped to form an educated opinion on his character. As if I would have brought him to the farmhouse.
I'm not doing this with you, Dad, I said. Bye.
Matthew Brennan gave the opening speech at a gala in aid of Barnardo's on Friday night, the Sunday Independent Online told me, a charity close to the property tycoon's heart. The accompanying photo was of Matthew with a woman who had elbow-length blonde hair. His hand was perilously high on her ribcage. Millie Shaw, the caption read. You have such a type, I'd said to him one day. We were lying in the hotel bed, the Lewis roaring past outside, talking about our sexual fantasies.
A threesome, he'd said. That's what I want. But it would have to be with someone we trusted, someone we knew wouldn't blab afterwards. Do you know anyone suitable?
I had smiled, pretending I wasn't picturing another woman, thinner than me, prettier, better.
What about that friend of yours? The one in your new profile photo on WhatsApp?
He asked. Aisling? I asked, and I felt sick. Aisling is far too square to have a threesome, I said. She's boring as fuck. Anyway, what is this obsession with blondes about? Matthew had previously mentioned other women he found attractive, all ghost versions of Florence.
Was your mother blonde, Matthew? I teased him. Is this an Oedipus type of thing? He had stiffened at the mention of his mother, and I knew that I'd made a mistake.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if I dyed my hair?
I rushed on before he could get up and leave me. If I just turned up one of these days, with blonde hair. He wound some of my thick, dark hair around his fingers, the hair that reminded me of my own mother every time I looked in the mirror.
I wouldn't object to that, he said.
Hello? Aisling said now as she answered her phone. Hey. Sarah, why is your number on private?
Because I phoned Matthew last night and hung up when he answered, like a teenager with a pathetic crush.
You sound fucked, she went on, without waiting for an answer. Good night, I take it?
I went to Kevin's house with Robbie. They were throwing a dinner party.
Girl, you fancy! That's some grown-up shit right there.
I tried to agree, but I couldn't get the words out, each attempt cracking into a heaving sob.
Sarah? She said. Sarah, what's wrong?
It's Matthew.
Oh, babe. Did you break up?
No.
I put my hand over my mouth to muffle the sobs. I didn't want Kevin and Robbie to hear me.
Sorry. Don't apologize, she said. Just tell me what's going on. Dad phoned me today to tell me there was a photo of Matthew with another woman in the Sindo mag.
Were they kissing?
They were posing for a photo together. Google it. It's the Bernardo's charity gala.
There was silence as she did so. Then a low, mm-hmm.
Okay, she said. I hate to say this, but it doesn't look great. I know, I said. Do you think she's hot?
You're much prettier, she said automatically. What did he say when you asked him?
I didn't reply.
Sarah, please tell me you phoned Matthew and talked to him about this.
I literally just saw it and I wanted to talk to you about it first.
But you're going to phone him now, right?
The flamingos started to move on the wallpaper, flapping wings, stamping feet. I lay back down in the bed.
Sarah,
she said.
I don't want to nag him.
You're not nagging him. You're asking him a simple question.
This is different, Ash. He's not some loser from Dunfinan. This is Matthew Brennan. I can't just...
Can't just what? Can't just have an honest conversation with him?
Of course I can, but it's not like we're official or anything. Do I even have the right to be upset about this?
Fitz, this is ridiculous. He texts you, you go meet him wherever and whenever suits him, and then he fucks you and sends you on your way afterwards with a pat on the ass. Am I missing something here? Because it seems pretty straightforward to me.
Ash, I said. I know it looks bad, but that's not how it is. He cares about me. I know he does. I told you what happened when I went back to his house before Christmas. This is my fault. I freaked out and now he's pushing me away. This is all my fault.
I don't know what to say to you.
Well, what do you think I should do?
I don't know.
Ash, help me. You're so good at stuff like this.
Sarah, I can't make these decisions for you. I have my own shit going on too, you know? She said. But for what it's worth, I think you need to talk to him.
And I realized that I had forgotten to ask Aisling about Jamesy. I still hadn't even told her that I knew about the breakup. Fionn was right. I was a terrible friend.
Okay, I said. I'll talk to Matthew.
I called him.
I'm busy,
he said, his voice brusque, as if he couldn't wait to get me off the phone.
I'll be in touch when things calm down.
I couldn't sleep after that, scanning through screen grabs of Millie Shaw and Florence Kavanagh that I had saved to my camera roll. At 4 a.m, I got up and turned on the light. Sitting in front of the mirror, I stared at my own face, then Millie Shaw's photo, my own face, then Florence Kavanagh. What did they have that I didn't? What would I have to do to make him love me? I sent him photos, describing where I wanted his hands and his mouth.
And if he showed them to his friends? She's 24,
he would say to them,
and she'll do anything. I mean, anything.
I want you, I said. I need you inside me. I've been thinking about you while I make myself come.
And, as if by magic, he suddenly found a spare afternoon in his schedule. Funny how that worked out.
Matthew. I'm upstairs.
Matthew. Where are you?
I don't have that much time, Sarah.
I didn't tell him that I had been at the hotel for over an hour already, pacing back and forth in the downstairs bathroom, practicing my lines in the mirror. Matthew, we need to talk, I imagined myself saying. I care about you, and I think you care about me. I want to know where I stand, Matthew. In my head, I sounded assertive, strong. In my head, I said all the right things.
At last,
he said when I knocked on the door of room 63 and he pulled me inside. Hey, I said, before we... He bent down to kiss me. Wait, Matthew. I wanted to talk to you about what happened at Christmas. I shouldn't have left your house without...
That doesn't matter.
Are you sure? You seemed really upset. I was worried about you.
Sarah.
There was a half smirk in his voice and I felt stupid for bringing it up.
I was drunk and talking nonsense. You take things far too seriously, do you know that?
He undressed quickly, gesturing at me to do the same, nodding in appreciation when he saw the corset I'd bought especially for today.
Jesus,
he said.
You look sensational.
Did he think I wore underwear like this all the time? Did he presume I wore lace thongs and sheer bras under my work clothes? That I lounged around in French knickers on my day off? Matthew, I said. He put his hands on my shoulders, pushing me to the floor.
Remember that text message you sent me the other day?
I looked up at him. What? He grabbed the back of my head.
Do what you said you wanted to do in that text, he said. I've been thinking about it all week.
That was only a fantasy, Matthew. Stop it, Matthew.
But I couldn't say that. It wouldn't be fair to lead him on.
Fuck, he said, leaning against the door. Fuck, that's good.
I don't want to do this. I don't want...
Without warning, he came.
You are so sexy,
he said as I made myself swallow. He let go of my hair, my scalp tingling.
And now it's your turn. Where's this toy? The one you sent me those photos of you using.
I forgot it,
I lied. Before I left the house, I'd opened the drawer that the vibrator was in. The thought of lying on the hotel bed, my legs spread so Matthew could see every part of me, made me feel so vulnerable that panic scratched its nails against my ribs.
Ah,
he said, disappearing into the bathroom.
That's a shame.
I pulled my dress back on. Matthew, I said in my head. Matthew, it's nearly been a year now, and I think it's time we decided where we're going. Matthew, I think we should talk. He stepped out of the shower, toweling himself off, and got dressed.
Right, he said, phone already in hand. I'd better get going. My schedule is manic today. January is always such a weird month for me.
Wait, I said, and he frowned, as if unfamiliar with the concept of waiting.
What's wrong?
He asked. Can we just talk for a minute?
Sure.
The bed dipped as he sat next to me.
What's up?
Matthew, I said, trying to remember my lines. Matthew, we've been seeing each other for nearly a year.
Has it been that long?
He said, leaning over to kiss me. Matthew... I pulled away from him. Matthew, please. I really want to talk about this.
Okay,
he sighed.
Let's do this.
Matthew, we've been seeing each other for nearly a year, and I thought that maybe it might be time for us to have a conversation.
A conversation?
Yes. A conversation about where things are going between us.
I thought things were going just fine.
He said, tracing his fingertips from my knee to my inner thigh. Come on, I said, taking his hand off my leg. I'm being serious here. What are we? Are we boyfriend and girlfriend?
I think I'm a little old to be having the boyfriend and girlfriend talk, Sarah.
You know what I mean. My face was burning with embarrassment. Are we properly dating?
Dating?
Sarah, I thought we were on the same page here. What's the page, though?
Having some fun.
You seem to be as relaxed about everything as I was. He fiddled with his cufflinks.
You're not a robot, though. I guess I should have realized that feelings would come into it sooner or later.
He said feelings as if it was a contagious disease, and he was terribly sorry that I seemed to have contracted it. I just think we have so much fun together, and I want to spend more time with you.
I don't have any more time to give you, Sarah. Not with work and with Harry. I thought you understood that.
I can't keep doing this, Matthew. It's getting too much for me.
Wait a minute,
Matthew said.
Are you breaking up with me?
No, I said, stroking the back of his neck. No, of course not. Please don't think that. But I do need to know where I stand.
Of course,
he said, smiling at me.
You can't break up with me because we were never in a real relationship in the first place, were we?
Yes, I said. That's true, I suppose, I said, and I got to my feet. I think I should probably leave. And he let me go. He let me go as if it was the easiest thing in the world. I woke in the middle of the night, coughing, trying to hack the sadness out of my chest. I wanted to draw it into my mouth like phlegm so I could spit it out, but I couldn't. The pain sat on me, heavy, dense. I couldn't breathe with it. My room was black and silent. I lay there, listening to my heart crack inside me.
You can't break up with me, because we were never in a real relationship in the first place.
My face was wet. I must have been crying. Why was I crying? He hadn't promised me anything. It was always supposed to be casual. You're being ridiculous, Sarah. He wasn't your boyfriend. It wasn't a real relationship. It was nothing. Light crept around the edges of my room. I could hear stirring, low groaning. Doors opened and closed. The shower turned on and off. Footsteps on the stairs.
Did you see my red shirt?
Nah, dude, sorry.
Ah, for fuck's sake, who drank the last of my milk?
Sarah, you up? Robbie said outside my bedroom door. You're going to be late for work? He said something else too, but I couldn't hear him. I was thinking about Matthew. He hadn't wanted to be there. He didn't want to be having that conversation, but I had to ask him. All I'd ever wanted was for him to say that I was enough. If he said it, maybe I could believe that it was actually true. I lay face down on the bed, my head buried in the pillow, telling myself I was stupid, telling myself I was overreacting. Hours passed and I needed to go to the toilet. My legs were unsteady beneath me, as if I was learning how to walk again. But I still brought my phone with me, just in case.
Oh,
Fionn said when he saw me. He was between his studio and his bedroom, holding a large canvas.
I thought you'd gone to work.
The painting was beautiful, a sky broken by lightning. He was so talented, Fionn. I should have kept harbour skies.
I should have done a lot of things.
Are you okay? He asked. I looked at him and he looked at me for the first time in months. I closed the bathroom door behind me. No, I said to the girl in the mirror. I am not okay. She was hollow eyes and flaking makeup and sticky thighs, wearing the same dress that she'd worn to that hotel. I pulled the dress off over my head and I stared at my body, wanting to see what he had seen. He had used it every way he wanted to, and I had let him, telling him to do it harder, to do it faster, to do it again and again and again. Bile ate its way up my throat, spilling bitter into the sink. I turned the tap on, splashed my face with cold water. You were acting crazy, I told myself. You weren't even in a real relationship, no matter how much you want it to be. I should have learned by now not to want more than I could have. I should have turned him down the first time he asked me out. I should have known not to get involved with a parent. I should have kept things professional. I should have refused to give him my number. I should have waited longer before texting him back. I should never have gone to meet him in that hotel. I should have insisted that he take me to dinner first. I should have waited until the third date to have sex with him. I should have been more reluctant. I should have sent shorter texts. I should have made him chase me. I should have been more honest. I should have been less honest. I should have been more like Florence. I should have dyed my hair blonde. I should have waited for him to text first. I should have been less needy. I should have been better. It was Saturday. It was Sunday. I was still in bed. Someone had put a box of Kleenex on my bedside locker, and there were balled up tissues littering the side of the bed. Occasionally, someone would come into my room. "Here," they said, and they offered me a glass or a plate. "Drink this," they said. "Eat this," they said. "It'll make you feel better." I held my phone in my hand like a talisman all weekend, waiting for him to call or to text. My father phoned. Stephen phoned, wondering why I'd missed work on Friday, no doubt. Aisling phoned. I didn't answer any of them.
"Jesus Christ," I heard Aaron say. "Can one of you talk to her? Between the phone calls and the incessant sobbing, I don't know how much more of this I can take. What's wrong with her?"
The low murmur of Robbie's voice. I wished he would speak up so I could hear him. I wished someone would tell me exactly what was wrong with me so that I could fix it. My phone ringing again. Let it be him. Let it be him.
"Sarah!"
It was Aisling. It was Aisling and it was not Matthew, and I felt something twisting in my gut.
"I've been trying to phone you all weekend."
"What day is it?"
"It's Sunday evening."
I rolled on my back.
"Sarah, are you there?"
"Yeah."
"Fionn texted me. He says you're in bad shape. I take it things didn't go well with Matthew." "Oh, Sarah, don't cry. He's not worth it," she said.
"But he was.
You deserve better,"
she said, but I didn't. She stayed on the phone, telling me it was all going to be okay, telling me that these feelings wouldn't last forever. She was getting good at lying, too.
"Jesus, are you all right?"
Stephen asked me when I walked into the staff room on Monday morning.
"You don't look so great."
I knew what I looked like.
I had made myself take a shower that morning,
soaping my sweat-grimed body. Not standing, but swaying, leaning against the tiles to support myself. Grief had made its home in me, and it was all too comfortable there. It knew me. It had been here before. But that other grief had made sense. It was normal. Expected. This one, I could not fathom. I touched it, tried to feel the shape of it, to hold it between my fingertips. The worst thing was knowing that I had done this to myself, with my stupidity and my mouth taped shut and my hungry eyes and my want. After I turned off the shower, I wiped the steamed mirror clean and stood naked in front of it. I was thin. I was dark circles under wild eyes. I was nothing special, nothing extraordinary. Not like her. I wished I could throw this body to a pack of starving wolves, watch them tear it apart. "You can't break up with me, because we were never in a real relationship in the first place." I didn't tell Aisling that Matthew said that to me. She would have been furious. "How dare he?" Aisling would have said. "How dare he say that to you?" And if I told her Matthew had said that, she would hate him, and we might still get back together. I didn't want Aisling hating him if... When that happened.
"Sarah,"
Stephen said, handing me a cup of tea and a Kit Kat.
"I'm Grant," I told him, refusing both. "A family member died on Friday, so I had to go home for the funeral."
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yes, I said. The woman had cancer, but it was quick, though. A blessed relief, everyone said.
Was she married? Kids?
Yes, a girl.
What age?
10.
Ah, that's a shocking age to lose your mother.
Yes, I said. She'll never recover from that, will she? I excused myself to go to the bathroom. She will never recover from that. She will be selfish and stupid and she will make bad choices. She will let men take her body and use it as they please. She will roll her eyes and say she doesn't care, but she does care. She does. She will lose him. She will realize that he was never hers to lose in the first place. I closed the cubicle door behind me, a hand over my mouth. I tried to be as quiet as I could. Now. Sarah cursed as she dropped her house keys, her fingers stiff with the cold.
Wrap up well, love,
her father had told her when she left Dunfinan.
It's always freezing in Dublin.
Hello, she called out as she opened the front door, hoping that...
Sarah!
His voice from their bedroom and the sinking disappointment that followed. All she had wanted was some quiet and a dark room to sit in by herself. Was that too much to ask for? Oisin stood at the top of the stairs now, looking at her as if she was a stranger. I thought you were staying in Killiney for Christmas.
I was, he said, but I came back to get the house ready.
Ready for what?
I'm having a party tomorrow night. New Year's is always such a shit show around town. Thought it would be better to have the crew here.
Sure, Sarah said. Makes sense. He cracked his knuckles.
I thought you were staying in Dunfinan until the 5th.
Well, she said, thinking of the last 7 days at home, Radio 1 blaring constantly. For the company, her father said, even though she was home and she could have kept him company. An awkward dinner in Clonmel with Aisling and Kira. Haven't heard from you in a while, Aisling said to Sarah, frowning as Sarah made increasingly feeble excuses. Sarah had meant to contact Aisling. She had meant to do it on too many occasions to mention. Eddie had told her 2 months ago that Aisling had decided to take a career break, go to Australia for a year.
She said she may as well, Eddie had said, since she still hasn't got her mortgage. I don't think she's met anyone else either, and you know Jamesy's engaged to Catherine Hogan now, don't you?
Sarah had wanted to phone Aisling then, tell her how excited she was for her. You're dead right to go, Ash, she would say. You'll have a ball. But then Sarah thought of Aisling asking her about Oisin. Sarah would have to tell Aisling. She would have to tell her about how the house was too quiet now, she and Oisin barely speaking. Their relationship was disintegrating, whatever love they once shared slipping through her fingers. Sarah didn't know how to stop it happening. At this point, it felt as if she would simply have to wait and see how it all played out. Sarah thought she should leave him, but where would she go if she did? The rest of the holidays had been spent sitting in the house, her father watching TV, until yesterday when she couldn't take it any more. Sarah had grabbed the car keys and told her father that she was going to the graveyard. She'd kissed two fingers and pressed them against where Nana Kathleen's name was engraved. Then she sat on her mother's headstone, shivering. There were fresh flowers on the grave, white roses and holly, tied with red ribbon.
Era, leave it alone,
her father had said when Sarah asked him about the bouquet. Then later, as they were saying good night, Eddie said,
I miss her too, Sarah, no matter what you might think.
I decided to come back early, Sarah said to Oisin now. How was your Christmas? He hadn't phoned her on Christmas Day. Oisin always phoned her on Christmas Day. But then Sarah hadn't phoned Oisin either.
Good,
he said.
Yours?
Sarah stood there, her small suitcase at her feet, and tried to think of something to say to him. I think I might go out.
Out? Out where?
Just out.
she said, one hand on the doorknob already.
But you only got back 2 minutes ago.
I need some fresh air. She closed the front door behind her, Oisin still protesting. She sat down on the porch, stretching her legs out in front of her, and lit a cigarette. When that cigarette was finished, she lit another one. She waited in the cold until it was late and the hall lights went out. She waited some more, and when she felt sure that Oisin was asleep, she inched back inside, taking off her shoes and gingerly stepping upstairs. He was sprawled across the bedsheets, face down, a book on the pillow beside him. Sarah placed her hand on the back of his head, but he didn't wake up. She knew that she had loved Oisin once, and fiercely. She thought she would love him forever. What was she going to do now? Then. I shouldn't have forced his hand. Sarah, come on. I knew he was weird about commitment. I should have waited until we'd been seeing each other for longer. You had been having sex with the man for almost a year, Aisling said, exasperated. How much more time did he need?
Yeah, I said.
You can't break up with me.
You're right, I suppose, I said.
Because we were never in a real relationship in the first place.
But I shouldn't have had sex with him so soon, Ash. If I had insisted that he bring me out for dinner first, he would have respected me more.
Too soon? Do you really want to be with a guy who doesn't respect you because you slept with him too soon?
I bet Florence didn't sleep with him until they'd been dating for 3 months. She probably set an alarm on her phone to remind her of the socially acceptable time to unlock her chastity belt.
Aisling sighed. You do know it's not her fault, right? Florence Kavanagh has literally nothing to do with any of this.
She keeps Matthew on a string. If she just cut off contact with him, then he'd be able to move on properly.
Sarah, Aisling said, she's the mother of his only child? How exactly is she supposed to cut off all contact?
It's still not fair, going on holidays with him and spending Christmas with him and letting him think that he's in with a chance with her when she's off dating someone else.
Isn't that kind of pathetic on Matthew's part, though? She asked. Would you really want to be with someone like that anyway?
Doesn't matter what I want, does it? Florence has won now.
Won? Won what? A sad man who has no capacity to love anyone but himself?
That's some prize. He has the capacity to love Florence, doesn't he? Maybe if I had been more extraordinary, like her, I continued, ignoring Aisling, then he might have...
Fitz, I have to go to work.
I checked my watch. I was going to be late too if I didn't hurry up.
Are you mad at me?
I asked her.
No, I'm just... You know I love you, right? And I want to be here for you. But I feel like we've been having the exact same conversation every day for the last 6 weeks. And I'm trying my hardest to be sympathetic. But Matthew Brennan is not worth all this heartache. He never was.
6 weeks of waking up, my throat sore and my eyes burnt out. 6 weeks of dragging myself out of bed, standing in front of the mirror and looking at my body, the bones rising to the surface like driftwood. 6 weeks of crying in the staff bathroom between classes, despair tearing through me at the thought that he's not mine, he's not mine, he'll never be mine. 6 weeks of visiting psychics, watching as they turn over their tarot cards, Death, the Tower, Nine of Swords.
Ah, you've had your heart broken, they told me, but it's time for you to move on. He was not the man for you.
I wondered how much money I would have to pay to make them all tell me what I wanted to hear.
I'm sorry, I told Aisling now. I know it's been a lot. I'm really grateful for how good you've been to me.
It's nothing, she said. That's what best friends are for, right?
I didn't mention Jamesy. I could not help her when I was drowning.
You'll have February midterms next week, she said. Come home to Dunfinan. It'll do you good to get out of the city for the week.
Mm-hmm, I said. Ash, listen, do you think I should text him?
No.
But I just think that if I text him and we...
Sarah, he hasn't texted you, has he?
No, he had not. I woke in the morning, I showered and I brushed my teeth, and he hadn't texted me. I walked around the art room. That's very good, Connor. And lighter brush strokes there, Hugh.
and "Did you just spit at Adon, Noah?"
And he hadn't texted me. I went home and I listened to Joy Division on repeat, and he hadn't texted me. Love, love will tear us apart. Love will tear us apart. And he hadn't texted me. I could not sleep, and I checked my phone, and it was 1:30 a.m., and I checked my phone, and it was 2:57 a.m., and I checked my phone, and it was 4:33 a.m., and he hadn't texted me.
"But maybe he's just waiting for me to text first," I said. "Maybe," Aisling said, "but I doubt it."
I gasped, but she didn't apologize.
"Look, Fitz, I have to go to work."
She hung up without saying goodbye.
Love, love will tear us apart again. Love, love will tear us apart again. Love, love will tear us apart again.
The earbuds were yanked away, the bed sagging as a body sat down.
"You're crushing my feet."
I kicked whomever it was off.
"And you scared me. What the fuck are you doing coming into my bedroom without knocking?"
"I did knock."
The door was open, a sliver of light from the landing splitting the darkness. I could make out my desk and the heap of unwashed clothes on the floor, and the person sitting in front of me. It was Aaron, in a t-shirt and shorts, his hair mussed.
"You didn't hear me because you're listening to that fucking song again."
"What's your problem? I have earbuds in." "But they're not much help when you're wailing like Bjork."
"I'm surprised the neighbours haven't lodged an official complaint."
He rubbed his eyes.
"Fitz, we talked about this at the house meeting. I'm sorry you're going through something, but it's been 2 months now and the rest of us need to sleep. I thought we agreed at the meeting that..."
"Stop going on about that stupid meeting."
It had been like some bullshit that Dr. Phil would have dreamt up. I came home from work, exhausted from a day of pretending to be fine, and there they were, Fionn and Robbie and Aaron's annoying girlfriend, sitting in the living room. "We have to talk," Aaron said. "We're worried about you. We want to help you," Robbie said. Fionn and Amelia stayed quiet, Fionn staring at the floor. "I'm fine," I said.
"I still can't believe that your girlfriend was there," I said now, "as if it had anything to do with her."
"Shh,"
he said, pointing at his room next door.
"She's in there,"
he whispered,
"and this affects Amelia too. She's having a stressful time at work right now, and she doesn't need to be kept awake by you singing to Joy Division 500 times in a row."
"If she hates it here so much, why don't you stay at her place?"
"You know her parents won't let us sleep in the same bed."
"Well then, she should pay rent. If she wants to come to all these house meetings that you're suddenly such a big fan of, it seems fair that she should contribute."
"I don't know what you're talking about. Robbie said you still haven't paid this month. He said you owe him 500 euro.
He..."
I had forgotten that.
"Do you have rent?"
he'd asked me. "It's due today." I hadn't answered him. It had seemed like too much effort. "That's not fair, Sarah. You know that Robbie can't afford that. It's not like he's making a fortune at the gallery."
Amelia said...
"You told Amelia?"
"Of course I did,"
he said.
"She's my girlfriend."
That's what people did in proper relationships. They told their partner about their life. They asked for advice on problems they were having in work or with family or with a housemate who wouldn't get out of bed because she was too heartbroken over some guy she wasn't even going out with in the first place. They asked each other what they liked in bed. They made sure the other was sexually satisfied. They remembered their partner's birthday and what their hometown was called and their father's name and their dead mother's favorite song. They treated each other with respect.
"You know," I said, "everyone hates Amelia."
"What?"
"All of us, we hate her."
"Fitz, come on, that's not fair."
"It's not just me, Aaron. We all hate her."
"Fitz, I'm serious."
"That accent? Why does she sound like she's a member of the royal family when we know she's from Cabra? When are you ever going to come to your senses and dump the pretentious bitch? Maybe I should call a house meeting to discuss it. What do you think? Does that seem like a good idea?"
There was a whimper from the other room, so loud that Aaron and I started. A rustle of clothes. A shadow as a body blurred past us, the front door crashing open.
the revving of a car engine. Amelia! Aaron ran after her. Amelia! I could hear him downstairs, leaving messages on her answering machine.
Babe, she didn't mean it,
he said.
Sarah's in a bad place.
All the lads love you. Please phone me to let me know you got home okay.
Amelia, did you get my message? Please phone me.
Heavy footsteps on the stairs. Aaron, I said, and he stopped outside my door. I'm sorry, I didn't.
No, Sarah.
Please, let me explain.
I don't want to hear it,
he said.
Not from you.
I'm sorry, I said, and Aaron shut his bedroom door in my face. I'm sorry, I said, but Aaron left the room when I came in, pretending that I didn't exist. I apologized to his girlfriend, too, and Amelia told me that she forgave me, but she was like a shadow after that, slipping through the house without sound, leaving only traces of musky perfume and cigarette smoke behind.
They are looking for an apartment together, Robbie told me over breakfast. They've been going to viewings on their days off.
Oh, I said.
What you did was not okay, he said. I don't care what you're going through right now. That was a shitty thing to do. And to bring me and Fionn into it.
Sarah,
what on earth possessed you?
Fionn was barely acknowledging my existence either, preoccupied with the string of girlfriends that he paraded through the front door. Natalia was replaced by an Isolde, and then a Hannah, and now Imogen was there all the time, calling Fionn baby and sweetie, and telling him how brilliant he was. My boo is so talented, Imogen said in the kitchen, blowing a kiss at Fionn as he cooked dinner for them.
Have you seen his new collection, Sarah? It's incredible.
No, I said, even though I used to be the first person Fionn showed his work to. I haven't. I phoned Aisling at 2 a.m. when I couldn't sleep. I'm sorry to wake you, but I really want to text Matthew, I said, and she told me not to. Oh, Sarah, she said, sounding groggy. What good would it do? I phoned Aisling on the bus to work. I just think that maybe I should text him in case he's been waiting for me to text first. I phoned Aisling at small break, sequestered in the staff toilet. I'm going to text him. You know what? She said. Whatever. Go right ahead and text him. Seriously? I said, pressing my feet up against the cubicle wall. Do you think it's a good idea? It doesn't matter what I think, does it? Sarah Fitzpatrick will just do whatever Sarah Fitzpatrick wants to do. What's wrong? You sound pissed off. Are you pissed off at me? Why would I be pissed off? I mean, it's April now, so that's been 3 months since you broke up with Matthew. 3 months of phoning you and texting you and listening to you and trying to be the best fucking friend that I could possibly be. Well, you've been amazing, Ash. You know how grateful I am. 3 months, and you still haven't asked me how I'm feeling about Jamesy. You remember Jamesy, don't you? My boyfriend of 7 years? I presume you heard that we broke up? That was my actual boyfriend. Not like your weird messed up affair with a man who clearly couldn't give a shit about you. He's made that perfectly clear, hasn't he, Fitz? What else did you want him to do? Ash, please. But Jamesy wasn't worth mentioning, was he? Even though we were living together and I thought we were going to get married and spend the rest of our lives together, and I feel like I've lost my best friend in the entire world. I could barely get out of bed for a week afterwards, Sarah. I had to move back in with my parents. Did you know that? Do you even care? I did know. But I never asked her about it.
Who gives a shit, though? She continued. Jamesy is only some loser from Dunfinan, right? He treated me with respect and actually wanted to be in a relationship with me, but that doesn't count when he's from Ballygobackward. Not like the all-important Matthew Brennan. Jesus, I'm so sick of hearing his name. I'm so sick of hearing you talk shit about Dunfinan. You keep making out that it's just some hick town where no one understands fashion and we're all a bunch of farmers. You think I don't see the way you look at Kira? Ash, she's had postnatal depression, did you know that? She and Owen nearly broke up because she couldn't stop crying all the time, and she refused to even look at Holly for the first 6 months. She had to go on antidepressants. They go to Clonmel once a week for couples counselling, and Kira's still convinced he's going to leave her.
How was I supposed to know that? Kira never tells me anything.
She doesn't tell you anything because you've never bothered to ask her. It's always Sarah, Sarah, Sarah. I suppose you think Kira was stupid getting pregnant, so typical of the idiots down the country. Well, Dunfinan is my home, Sarah. I choose to live here.
Does that make me an idiot as well? Or am I forgiven because you need someone to dump all of your shit on?
I don't dump all of my shit on you, I said. I needed your support.